The leaves are heavy on the ground. We are stood in Stadtpark, outside Forum Stadtpark. The Elevate Festival is in full swing inside. And I've just stepped outside with...
Dr. Larissa Kingston-Mann, also DJ Ripley.
DJ Ripley, who is a fascinating bridge between the two facets of the Elevate coin. You've got your musical interests and you've got your political interests, should we say.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Well, my approach to music is informed by politics.
A car reversing into my legs right now. I'm just going to signal him while you keep talking. Keep going.
You keep us safe. I'll keep talking. So yeah, my approach to politics is influenced by the music. My approach to music is influenced by politics. I mean, music is an expression of culture and community, which are the founding and motivating forces of politics, including being culture being a resource that people struggle over. So yeah, it's always been a sort of circular or perhaps a figure eight kind of winding relationship in and out of both. And I think the best kind of DJ sets are a kind of activist experience. So I don't think of it as ideally as educational, because that seems quite passive, but I think of it more as a way of moving and thinking and feeling together in a potentially transformative way.
What percentage of the audience, what percentage of the participants, should we call them, in the room feel the same way, do you think?
It depends, but that's the success is when people do. And I think, you know, it depends a bit on where you are and who the audience is, what kind of relationship also we're all going to have. So, you know, my ideal spaces are ones that are multiracial, multi-class, multi-gender, multi-sexuality, and people feel valued and centered and able to express themselves in the fullness of who they are. When you have spaces that are homogenous on some of those lines, sometimes I feel my role is to be a bit more disruptive or a bit more active in getting people to think and feel more carefully about how they engage with culture. So I don't play the same kind of music or engage in the same kinds of ways across all audiences. It's really specific. But the moments that I love are when people come up and, you know, they don't just say, I mean, it's nice when people say, great set, you know, but when they say, you know, I see what you did, I feel what you're doing. And that happens often enough that I feel pretty good about it for the most part.
That's great. So have you ever played inside a mountain before?
I actually have.
Oh, wow.
But it was this mountain.
Ah, okay.
And it was before Elevate ever existed. I started out DJing in 1995. And I met Danny, one of the founders of Elevate, in New York in 2001. And we had similar interests then around politics and music, and he was already starting to do events in Graz. So a couple years later, I think around 2003, I managed to play in the Dom in Berg, which was then fantastic, and I've seen it now. It's definitely been remodeled since then, and I'm really excited to play again.
Amazing. Your 20th anniversary of being a DJ as well.
Yes, rather.
You almost like you don't want to be reminded.
No, it's you know, you have to be one with it at this point.
So you are... We had a brief conversation earlier on, just over lunch, about how you don't normally travel with vinyl, but what kind of setup are you traveling with at the moment?
So I have my laptop. I have actually not much more, because I asked the festival, ideally I ask the venues to provide it, because it's easier in many ways for traveling to do that. When I play, I prefer to use vinyl controllers and Serato Scratch, which is a program that allows me to play MP3s but use vinyl records to control the MP3, because I grew up with vinyl and I learned on vinyl and all my skills are with vinyl first. So, and it's also just more fun physically to play. I'm not much of a button pusher in terms of it's not fun for me. I think however people make music is great. I don't have any allegiance in a sort of abstract way to you must play with vinyl or CDs or anything. But for me personally, the physicality of moving a record back and forth and having the sound go back and forth and until recently, I would say the physicality of that for an audience, people can see you and they know what you're doing, which is important to open that up so people can see the process. Whereas if someone just sees you looking at a laptop, they don't know what you're doing necessarily.
And the laptop is quite often a barrier between you and them. And also with a lot of the overhead cameras nowadays, there must be quite a pleasing skeuomorphic visual.
I prefer that. I prefer when you, and you know, but you have to have a bit of knowledge to understand, even if you see the laptop and the keys, what, you know, what relation that has to the sound. The demoralizing thing for me was realizing that nowadays, if you have turntables, that doesn't mean people have any idea what you're doing either, because they're not as common as they used to be. So people have never seen someone, you know, play a set with turntables.
No, but there seems to be an incredible resurgence. Everybody saying vinyl once again exploding, pressing plants opening up around the world. It's interesting to see where this is going.
It's true, although what's interesting for me is that, I mean, and I'm not in the middle of it, because a lot of the music that I play also comes from the Global South, comes from places where people can't afford to press to vinyl. It's quite expensive. It's quite expensive to ship. It's certainly difficult to carry. So there's a lot of music circulating digitally that you just can't get any other way. And there is a big resurgence in the States of vinyl among a lot of more indie and experimental people who are creating, particular sorts of objects to own,
completely oblivious to the microphone.
There's some kind of conversation happening around us. That's good. So, you know, which is great, like, especially in the music industry in this time, people are trying to find something they can sell and create that has a kind of emotional resonance. And vinyl records are, you know, works of art, and you hold them and you love them and you carry them. But in the DJ world, even, I don't necessarily see vinyl coming back in a lot of places. Also because if you play a long set, I mean, that's, we all remember carrying, you know, 20 kilos of records around, but it's not pleasant. And for someone like me too, who plays a lot of different genres at once, and I mix pretty fast and pretty aggressively, I mean, I used to carry this massive box around, and I don't even know now if I could do that. And I like the fact that I can play new stuff that someone's just sent me from, you know, Angola or, you know, South Africa or Brazil, you know, the minute I get it. I mean, that instant gratification is really key. So I'm glad for vinyl to have a resurgence, but, you know, material objects are costly in all kinds of ways, and that makes it valuable, but also puts it out of reach of a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I'm glad there's sort of a multiplicity, you know, out there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess there's nothing like emailing your set ahead of you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been, you know, there's moments that are just really fun, or like when you know, it's quite common for, you know, when I tour and I stay with other DJs, you know, and we'll sit around and we're like, oh, what was that track you played? Oh, you know, here's this one. Oh, I just made one. Hey, let's do a remix right now. Like, you know, and the immediacy is really fantastic. I mean, of course, we all have either the training to make that stuff, which is costly, or the machines to carry it and share it, which is also costly. But, you know, you also get these great moments like, I'm going to tell a really short story, which is not about me. It's bigging up another DJ, but it's my favorite story and I want to do something like this. So anyone who hears it, please get in touch if you want to do this. I have a friend, DJ Sebkat, who's part of the Rebel Up Sound Clash crew in Brussels. And he was invited to DJ at a building in Brussels, which is a place where people who are waiting to hear about their refugee status are living while they wait. And so there's a lot of people there. It's not a prison or anything like that, but it's a bit boring because they can't work, you know, and they've all just come from difficult situations and they're just waiting, and they wait for a really long time. So he somehow got invited to DJ a party, and he said, I'll do it, but I'm going to play the music that they have with them on their cell phones.
Wow.
Right? And this is what I mean. Like, you know, I just got chills. I was like, that is such a beautiful idea. And that's what I mean about a sort of political, cultural moment, you know, like, and this is deeply political, and it's not because the lyrics of their songs have a kind of politics that you could analyze absent this context. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe it's, and it might not even be, you know, there are people from Syria, it might not even be Syrian music. Maybe they like Britney Spears. That's fine. What it means to play a song that someone cared enough to carry on their phone with them into this place is a kind of meaning that you can't get in any other way, you know? And so I was like, I'm so excited by this, and I think that's the kind of thing I think that, you know, you can do now, you know, that allows for a kind of a set of relationships and conversations and experiences where people really start to attend to each other's context in a meaningful way. So I just think that kind of thing is incredible.
It just touches upon so much stuff, the portability of people's personal art being being one. I remember 2005, I just got back from taking photographs during the Iraq War, and I was working with a guy applying to Magnum picture agency, Gert van Kesteren, this Dutch photographer, and he was saying, it's just getting too dangerous. And I'm like, well, I'm never going back after what I've just seen. And he's like, I don't know what to do now. I says, I kind of a throwaway comment, and I was like, why don't, I think it was about 2006-07 at this point, why don't you just ask them, all the people you'd come into contact with, to tell their friends to SMS you images from their phones.
Yeah.
And he did just that.
Yeah.
And he created this exhibition, and you had Robert Capa upstairs in this gallery, and he was downstairs.
Nice.
And he had all these very square-looking, low-resolution images, very real documentary shots taken on... You think about what phones were back then, not particularly special. And here we have the same kind of reflection of people's lives, but done in audio, because the devices have moved on enough for them to become quite good MP3 players.
Yeah, I think also, I mean, what is special to me about the DJ gig is he also played it for the people whose phones it was.
Yeah.
And so you also have, you know, because I think one thing that technology is really good at is extracting things from everywhere and putting it in another place. But that's not necessarily liberating, like this whole like field recordings, like I can go anywhere and record field recordings and make a song out of it. That's exciting, but that's not necessarily a very new relationship, especially for people from the first world.
Some of the early blues documenters were capturing songs in their last throes almost, which were gonna die with the person singing.
It's true, but at the same time, you know, for whose benefit, right? Like the point is, like,
culture,
you know,
as a
people
whole.
I don't know if I believe in culture as a whole. I think that culture is rooted in bodies and histories and land and all kinds of things. And so if culture as a whole can survive by extracting culture from the most marginalized and giving nothing back to them, then it's not a good thing, I think.
Okay, so
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm thinking the shared culture, but you're making me think about pockets and niches.
Well, it's that culture to me is that, I mean, and this I think is exactly where the technology issues is, you know, I don't think that technology is a defining feature of life, and that I think there's broader social forces that shape our lives, and technology is subservient to that. But I do think technology...
Don't you think we're subservient to technology?
I mean, it depends who you mean by we.
Well, personally, me.
But I mean, I think, I don't know, I would say it's not the technology, it's the entities that use it and want to use what it can do in various ways for me. But I think in this case, one of the things that technology is designed to do quite well, and again, I would say this is because of who actually develops technology, is it's very easy to separate culture from humans and treat it as an object that you can then pass around.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's not even a division that some communities, ethnic groups, you know, peoples even think is valid. Like, it isn't the same thing anymore. If you take a song that is traditionally only sung by a mother to her child in the first 5 years of life and you put it in a pop song, it's A, not that song anymore, and B, it's actually can be an act of violence, you know, against that culture. So I think it's not always this case. Like, I'm definitely not saying nobody can ever interact.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that is important is that, you know, there's a lot of inequality in the world, and simply looking at things as sharing can flatten out some of that, you know.
So
what I
respecting
mean?
Historical context
and material context, like people, you know, there's people who are suffering, you know, in the States we're having you know, a sort of resurgence of and not just in the States, in North America, a resurgence of Indigenous and First Nations people who are finally getting a claim on stopping sports teams from using mascots, right?
Yeah,
with really unpleasant racial imagery. And but it's still a debate, you know, where there's this idea that you can take an image and just use it because you like it. And that's certainly something many artists do as well. And I'm not going to say in itself that's a bad thing at all. But I think it's always worth thinking of, well, where did the image come from and how does it affect those people? And if those are people who are historically, you know, suffering specifically because of those images, then maybe there's something more to be done, you know? So I feel like
your set is filled with some tracks from very niche
Absolutely.
Parts of culture that you don't even know what they're saying. So how do you know you're not offending them?
That's a great point. I'm not at all exempting myself from that. I mean, and I think for me, and this is where being a DJ again is important. This is for me, not knowing anything about the story you told other than what you said, the difference between that dance and the gallery is you are accountable to your audience.
Yes.
And then it becomes who your audience is, because when I DJ in Europe, and this is actually for me a real issue now, it's quite different than when I DJ in the United States, because a lot of the events I play in Europe are really very, very white. And I play a different set and I think very differently about what I play than when I play in a multiracial audience, because I don't want it to be a sort of touristic, voyeuristic, fetishistic experience. I'm not going to take people on a journey through the exotic climes of yada yada. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what I want to do, because that is a very old and powerful tradition that is very comfortable. I think this is something that people don't talk about, is that there's pleasure in exploiting people. And obviously there is, or it wouldn't have happened so much and it wouldn't be so easy. So
I think the only people that get away with that a lot of the time, I mean, get away with it in a positive vein, is other comedians who are making us look at our own behaviors.
We hope so. Yeah. We hope
many
so.
Many don't get that.
Yeah. But I think, so it's not that that's the only pleasure, but like part of what I'm trying to do is create the other kind of pleasure, which is the pleasure of knowing people, or, you know, feeling people for who they really are, which is often different from, you know, it's not, I don't think we all have to be the same.
If it wasn't for people like you opening that door ever so slightly to people like myself when I come along and I experience these peaks into, and yes, it is voyeuristic.
Yeah, there's definitely.
But I'm of the kind of person that would like to step through and know more, you know.
Yeah.
I'd be more than happy for you to break the set halfway through and then show a film.
Right.
With more context and make everybody, you know, completely mess with their minds.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think There are definitely a lot of musicians who are doing this in various ways. And I think also, you know, it's not separate from, it's not just about knowledge and learning. It's, you know, although, you know, it's also the people who make the music, you know, if they are still alive and reachable, you know, I try as much as possible to, you know, give conduits to them as well. So, and, you know, that's part of, you know, I'm part of a group in New York called Dutty Arts. And we're a record label and a collective of artists. It's actually not only in New York, where we have people in Rio and Los Angeles and other parts of North America and beyond, actually. But, you know, a lot of what we're interested in is this, is that we, you know, we all make music and art of various kinds, but we also try to be conduits to connect the people and the communities across these different sort of boundaries, so that the resources flow too, you know. And it's and we're not outside that either. Like there's ways in which, yeah, there's voyeurism, there's inequality, there's exploitation. That's the world we live in. It's set up in this massively unequal way, and you can't really pretend you're not part of it. But, you know, when you have a choice, what do you do? That's kind of the place at which I try to, you know, be. And also, I try to show that there are more choices than we might have thought. That is, you know, sometimes you get this like, well, either it's total cultural protectionism or everybody sharing everything all the time. And I'm like, well, I don't think either of those things are very helpful. You know, I'm sure, you know, people in, you know, there's definitely a lot of people in the world who've had their resources shared by people in the global north for a long time. So sharing isn't automatically going to feel liberating. At the same time, people often do want to travel, share, connect, mix cultures, you know, and they do anyway. They can't help it. You know, right now, Europe is grappling, you know, with varying levels of failure and success with a sort of,
to use a horrible cliche, another melting pot.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, yeah, I think the question of what, you know, what's melting, you know, I mean, in a way, it's funny because in the intro to the Elevate Festival discussion, there was someone who mentioned the sort of Reagan-Thatcherite era vision of no society. And I think, you know, as something to be fighting against, right, that there is no such thing as society. And I think that's definitely a force, that's definitely an ideology which is powerful. But I think in Europe, and especially in sort of central, more well-off parts of Europe, like where we are now, people believe quite strongly in society, but it's founded on blood and citizenship. And that's the problem there. I mean, there's definitely neoliberal or whatever you want to call it, libertarian strains of things going on here. I think that's much stronger in the States.
But here, not so much patriotism.
Well, I think it's, the point is that, you know, there are, you know, still some fairly strong and healthy social systems that are self-contained in a lot of Europe, but they're surviving and always survived because they weren't for everybody. And the problem, you know, the U.S. had a different kind of foundation. The U.S. was founded on genocidal displacement and slavery. So you had people physically in the same space who couldn't be part of society, but who were there right next to you, you know, or were next to each other. So the whole framework for what society is had to be looser because there was this sort of fundamental contradiction. Europe always had its exploited classes on another continent. And so the problem now, I think, is that's crumbling. That's melting. And so the sort of fiction of a tidy, well-ordered society where everyone takes care of everyone, it's not that that's not an achievable goal, but it's much more difficult if you account for the historic colonial extraction and imperialist sort of fantasies that are still going, mm-hmm. you know? So I think, you know, what is going to be really interesting is, you know, will these sort of beautiful convivial things like are happening, I've seen in Germany, you know, even in the music scene, which is very near and dear to my heart, you know, I want people who emphasize the flow of culture to support the flow of people who make culture. So in Germany, there's been a couple different things happening. I think it's called Plus One, where different clubs are actually having people donate atop their ticket price, and the money is going to support refugees who are coming into Germany. And there's like an apartment sharing thing that's set up so that people can actually house folks in their homes, kind of like a Craigslist or whatever these other, you know, I don't even want to say Airbnb, but you know, these other kinds of entities, but you know, founded on a different principle, you know, and I think that's one hope. You know, people say, well, the resources we have actually came, you know, in part from the places that where people are now coming from, so we'd better start giving it back. The U.S., again, not to say the U.S. is exempt, just the reparations and the return of land is going to be a little different in that context, but it's the same, you know, it's the same thing. I support it in all those cases, you know, so I think, you know, the role that culture plays is that middle ground, like the conviviality thing that someone said earlier I thought was very nice, right? It's like, we have to sit down at the table together, you know, so spaces like Elevate and musical events and cultural events are all, I think, important ways, you know, to make that happen, which is really nice.
Very much so. There is definitely a feel of kind of solidarity, mm-hmm. I guess, and the collective here being eclectic in many ways, and yet changing year on year faster, unfortunately, than some of the things that are going on outside, which just seem to be continually spiraling.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, what can people expect from your set tonight?
Well, I do play it by ear a little bit because
you get a feel for the room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's also the first hour and a half, so it sort of depends on who's in the space and where they're at. I definitely love all the other DJs that are playing, and so part of my set will be inspired by the different kinds of vibes that I hear, that I know already from DJ Funk and RP Boo and Bok Bok and Venus. And, you know, I mean, it's just a lovely group of people to be playing with. And so there's always a lot of bass. There definitely be some nods to music from all over the world. I have a deep fondness for a lot of UK-centric bass music, so there will likely be various eras of that stuff coming through as well. There's a lot of new exciting music coming from different countries in Africa, especially Angola and South Africa for me, so I'll probably play some of that club music. It'll range in tempo, it'll range in style, it will keep changing, so I would say you know, it will be worth sticking around for because it will continually move. So
thank you so much. If people want to find out more about you, where can they go online?
So I do have a Twitter handle of @LaRipley, so @LARIPLEY, and I do blog on occasion at RipleyDJ.com, RIPLEYDJ.com. You can follow me on Facebook if you want. I don't post a lot on there because you know, they don't actually let you do anything useful without paying them. So, you know, but I am on there. It's DEEJAY Ripley at the end. And I'm on SoundCloud, and I have several hours of mixes. I have 8, I think, mixes now on SoundCloud, SoundCloud/Ripley. So
I'll certainly be visiting there, and also getting to see you again in the flesh tonight. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me to do this.